Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the Intelligent Design the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin, and I'm broadcasting from Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. I have on the show with us today Brendan Dixon, a programmer with the Biologic Institute, who recently co-authored a paper titled Stylus, a program for evolutionary experimentation based on a protein-proteome model with non-arbitrary functional constraints, that was published online in PLOS One, and it is about a new program used to simulate evolution called Stylus. So, Mr. Dixon, thank you very much for being on the show with us today.
Hi, Casey. Thank you.
Well, could you first describe to us what is this program Stylus that you have programmed in conjunction with Douglas Axe and Philip Liu that you published about in your paper?
Well, Casey, Stylus is a program that fits into a large class of programs that have been written for the last 20 years or so that go by a variety of names. These are either genetic algorithms or evolutionary programming. And these are all a class of programs that in one way or another seek to apply the principles of evolution in a manner to see what they can yield, to solve known hard problems that are difficult to solve in other ways, or to just, you know, study and learn about what evolution can or possibly cannot do.
So as I understand Stylus, it is intended to simulate evolution through digital organisms, as they're often called. Can you explain how Stylus does this, and what is the model of digital organisms that Stylus uses?
Sure, Casey. Let's kind of start from the top. What Stylus has as a digital organism is an internal representation of characters from what is commonly known as the Han alphabet or East Asian alphabet. What we've done is we have a way of encoding these characters much like you would encode a protein within a gene, a portion of a DNA strand. Stylus is then able to take these genes and let them undergo mutation of virtually anything that we find in real biology, produce a new version of the character with those mutation effects in the gene, and then we're able to evaluate that character for fitness in a manner that makes sense to somebody who is a native Chinese speaker. This gives us a whole system that allows us to start with a gene that represents a character and let it experience evolution and see if we can get the character better, what kinds of mutational effects it can survive and still remain readable. It gives us some notion of time, how long it takes certain things to do. It gives us a chance to see will evolution in this sense kind of find itself rat-holing in a place? Will it branch out in ways that we didn't expect? Those are just some of the things that Stylus is capable of helping us take a look at.
Now, I think I mentioned earlier in the podcast that you are a programmer. So what was your role that you played in the development of Stylus?
Yeah, I'm a programmer. I've been, I'm best known as a software architect. I have been in the software industry for, many years, 25 years or so, where I have worked on everything from small systems to very large systems, from large scale-out web products to products people download and run on their computer. In fact, if somebody is running Windows, there's a high probability that they're using a lot of code that I've written. What I brought to the table was complementary skills to what Dr. Axe brought, in that we both saw an opportunity to kind of raise the bar around evolutionary programming with respect to simulation. So what I brought to Doug was an understanding of how to take an idea that we had both worked on and cast it into an actual software solution. I'm not an expert in biology, but I am an expert in software and have spent a lot of years working on these things. So the two of us were able to take our respective disciplines, combine them to produce Stylus.
You spoke a little bit about how this Stylus program uses Chinese characters in order to model evolution. And I know from reading your article published in PLOS One that one criticism of other attempts to simulate through computer simulations of evolution is that there is no logical tie between some kind of a function and the programming logic that's going on in the program. And therefore, it's difficult to imagine how you're actually, you know, in sort of a real-world sense, modeling evolutionary advantages. How does your program try to overcome that problem? For example, your paper says that, quote, a model that ties real functions to polymer-like structures would have the potential to achieve a new level of biological realism. Can you explain to us what you're saying there?
Yeah, I think I can, Casey. To answer that, let's kind of back up and take a look at it from another angle first. A lot of us watch TV, hit the internet to get weather reports. And we look at that and these reports are generated by computer models of some sort, and we rely on them to help us understand what kind of weather is coming along. These weather programs, even if they're reliable, even if they reliably predict the weather, they don't generally help us understand lots and lots of stuff about how weather works. You can have a very successful weather program that is based wholly on statistics and does no causal modeling inside of the variables that make up a complex weather system. And it can still be very accurate. So it's possible to have programs that at some level display accuracy, but don't really correlate to the thing they're trying to simulate. One of the things that we wanted to do with Stylus was develop a program with which people could conduct very real experiments, but we could comfortably say had a strong correlation to biology. There's a couple of three problems here that have to be solved to do that successfully. The first problem is you really need to have a world of organisms, and preferably a large enough world of organisms, so that the size of things that you're dealing with has some correspondence to, say, the number of available proteins that we know that are they're biologically fit.
Mm.
Another problem that occurs often with these programs is in the heart of the program is something that's sometimes called a fitness function. When an organism undergoes a mutation, fitness of that organism is evaluated and it's given a good score or a poor score. And the routine that makes that scoring is called a fitness function. And programs, by definition, are deterministic. Even if they use random numbers, they're still deterministic in for the most part. And when you sit down and you write a fitness function, you have to make decisions about what is good and what is bad. And when you make those decisions, and when you encode them in a fitness function, you, in essence, are burying into your program a definition of where it's going to go. You only get out of your program successfully those things that pass the rules that you hard-coded. And it was important to us with Stylus that while nature itself is a fitness function and evaluates things to be healthy or unhealthy, that the fitness function in Stylus be one that was kind of organically developed and not one that either Doug or I made up. And I think the last thing that we were concerned about with Stylus that differs it or makes it different from other similar programs is the representation of the organisms within the program mirror, they're not exact, it's an analogy, but they mirror biology at multiple levels. Again, go back to the weather example. Even if I had a weather program that was a mixture of, say, statistics and multivariate modeling, to the extent that statistics are affecting the output answer, it diminishes the value of the multivariate model as a way of learning about how weather works. And so we wanted to be careful to try to have a model that mapped or looked like biology, if you will, at multiple levels. And so we solved all of these by, one, picking the Hahn character set Because if you think about the number of shapes that you can draw in a two-dimensional square, it's an incredibly large number. And the ratio of Han characters that are readable to that space is about the space, same number of biologically fit proteins to the range of possible proteins that somebody can create. So we felt good about that. The second thing is, regarding the fitness function, is we didn't invent this. Stylus evaluates characters on a notion of readability. Now, we had to encode, we had to write software to try to capture what it means for a character to be readable or not readable, but as the paper explains, those are common sense notions, and we've been able to validate those and do some verification checking with native Chinese speakers to make sure that the way Stylus is evaluating these things actually reflects what people consider to be a truly readable Han characters. And then lastly, like I said, we have multiple layers in the program of an analogy to biology. So you look at biology bases break up into codons, which, you know, map to amino acids, and similar in Stylus. Our bases are grouped together in codons, which map, in this case, to not an amino acid, but a small vector shape that helps to draw the character or move the pen about that renders the Han character glyph.
So I know that a criticism of other programs that do evolutionary computation and evolutionary simulation like this is that they will stack the deck in favor of evolution. So it sounds to me like you guys are trying to avoid stacking the deck in favor necessarily of evolution, just trying to create a model that accurately simulates biological reality. Is that the case? And in particular, I'm talking about Evita, obviously, the program that has gained a lot of notoriety for its evolutionary simulations of digital organisms. And there have been criticisms that it stacks the deck in favor of evolution. How is Stylus an attempt to improve upon maybe the attempts made in other programs like Evita and not stack the deck?
I want to be careful. I don't want to accuse somebody else of stacking the deck. I do think Evita has done some things, particularly when you read their papers closely, that would make you question the results. For example, the researchers with Evita found that unless they rewarded their organisms for getting longer, that their organisms would tend to be small and not make progress towards their final goal of creating the program they were after. And so I suppose if you look at that from one angle, you could say, gosh, you're stacking the deck. I know that with a stylus, Doug and I were very careful to, we really wanted to make sure that we weren't building a program that was stacked in one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
That was important, and we had many conversations about this. We didn't want to write a program that was anti-evolution or stacked against deck against evolution. That was not at all our point. We also felt, again, to be honest and to truly evaluate what evolution can or cannot do, it was important that the program not be stacked in favor of evolution. And again, so the way that we approached that and the way that we tried to do that was to build a virtual world that had a multi-layer analogy to biology, and then furthermore relies on an evaluation of fitness that was not invented by Doug, was not invented by me, but was invented and refined over several thousand years by people who speak Chinese and are comfortable reading the Han character set. So I think that by doing that, we've actually kind of raised the bar, the state of the art, as to what it means to create an evolutionary simulation program, at least with regards to one that's trying to model evolution in biology.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.